Got to tell you guys, I love worshiping with you. And I don't know, got kind of emotional about it today. Oops. Didn't mean to.
I'm not with you.
But you guys really, thank you so much, Danny, Cindy, Sally, Jeanette, everybody. Just been good. Good to worship. Then I got this new row of people sitting behind me with Sherry. It takes that many to contain her. We're glad you're here. And for all those who are watching online, it's just great to be worshiping together. You know, we're on this run through Micah, the book of Micah, not just the famous verse, but the whole book. But we are in the famous verse today. And so Micah 6:8. You know, we started a series, the Sermon on the Mount. We did our first Sermon on the Mount series on January 5th. And on January 5th, the name of the service, the name of the sermon was Change is Coming. I didn't know what I was talking about. It wasn't this kind of change, but it was change is coming. What happened? Change is coming. But the gospel story is about change. It's about good news. And we are deliverers of good news. And even as that series was going on early in January, I was preparing Micah in my mind, getting ready to go. I know what some things we're going to do in the fall, already planning some things in the fall, but we're planning that this Micah series earlier in the fall and thinking about what we're going to do here in the summer. We're going to be speaking about Micah, not knowing all the events, all the different kinds of unusual things that have happened since that January 5th moment. And here we are, Micah 6, verse 8. We'll read it in just a minute together. The question we asked last week was the question that the people were asking God, and they were asking Micah, and they're in this adversarial kind of moment, a courtroom moment, where God is accusing his people of not really living up to what he had created them to live up to. And they were kind of whining back and say, well, what do you want? I mean, tell us what you want. We're ready to offer sacrifices. You tell us what to bring. And, you know, sort of like a rebellious teenager. And, you know, some of us have never grown out of that rebellious teenager moment where we just want to argue and whine. And that's what the people were doing. And then Micah, speaking for God, says, hey, guys, you know what the Lord requires. And so this is where we're at today. We're going to talk about today the idea of due justice. But let's read the whole verse, Micah 6, verse 8. He has shown you what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To do justice. The NIV says to act justly, to do justice, and to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Let's pray together. God, we pray today just a prayer of thanksgiving that we have been able to worship you here together and also through the gift of technology, or perhaps sometimes the curse. But today, the gift of technology that lets us worship with other people who are all around the world, really. And we thank you for just the joy that we have when we come together. Father, that we can also just bear our burdens and share the difficult moments in our lives. We thank you for that as well. Today we ask for a message from you, a word from your Spirit. And I pray that the words that come out of my mouth, you would bless them and change them, do whatever you want so that the people who hear will hear a message really from you. In Jesus' name, amen. So the verse says this, do justice. And so these two words, pretty important. Do, justice. We're going to talk about the word do, kind of, just a little bit, and the word about and the word justice. It's something, I just want to say, justice is something you do when it comes to Micah 6:8. Something you're going to go out and do. You're going to sit here and do it. It's something you do. It's not just something you talk about. It's not just something you read about. It's not something you debate. It's something you actually do. And as we get through the end of the sermon today, we'll talk about some great examples of what it is to do justice. Now, one of the things about what justice isn't revenge. And we like revenge. Human beings kind of get hyped up about revenge because when someone does something wrong, we want them to, boom, get it. And so one of the great, there's lots of revenge movies in our culture. And one of my favorite revenge movies seems like a justice movie. Sometimes it's called A Time to Kill. And you know when that time to kill is? Never. But in the movie, there was a time because great wrong had been done. And man, when I can see a movie and it gets, for me, if it's bloody and bombs things blow up, that's even better. When I can see a movie, I can get really righteous and I want to go get that guy. And I want him to get killed, you know. But that's not what justice is. That's what revenge, that's what vengeance is. And God says he's going to take care of that. Leave vengeance up to him. But justice is something for us to do. So, you know, what is it? Now, we're going to watch a video in a minute. Not quite yet, but in a minute we're going to watch a video like we did earlier, this Bible Project videos, and you can just Google Bible Project. Man, it's good stuff. They have some good stuff. And one of the things I like about them, and you know, Danny, sound doctrine means? It means doctrine that agrees with me, right? That's what it means. Well, that's why I like these guys. Their theology, I like it, you know, so that must be good. Must be good videos. They think like me. But man, they got some really good videos. We already watched one on Micah. Today's is about justice. And there's a few things I want to kind of get straight before we get into it, because I'll prep you for a few things it's going to say. First, you know, it's about what is justice. And number two, how do you do it? These are the kind of the things the whole sermon is about today. What is justice? How do you do it? And so some key ideas. One is going to be righteousness. It's the idea of treating people with the God-given dignity that they deserve. Now, righteousness in the Bible is bigger than that, but the two words, tzaddik and mishpat, I just want to throw in some Hebrew words for the fun of it. One means righteousness, one means justice, but often they're interchangeable in some ways because they're so deeply connected. So righteousness is treating people with the God-given dignity that they deserve. You'll hear more about that in the video. Righteousness means some other things as well, but this for today, this is what it's going to be. And so then there's justice, and there's going to be talk about two types. One is retributive justice, and the other, and what that is, that's delivering consequences for bad behavior. It's about punishment and reward. It's about paying a fine or going to jail or being grounded. It's getting a spanking. This is retributive justice. You did something wrong, and you're going to get punished. And then there's restorative justice, which has to do with seeking out people who are being taken advantage of and helping them. This is what much of the Old Testament speaks about. People who are vulnerable or have already been abused and trying to make things right, making wrong things right. I want to put it in the context of a bully, okay? Retributive justice, this one, punishes the bully because the bully needs to be punished. He did this wrong. I can remember this is a story about getting spanked in fourth grade. That doesn't have anything to do with this. But I got punished. Restorative justice, in the context of a bully, is one that tries to, is justice that tries to create a system or nourish a culture that protects people from being bullied or prevents people from being bullied. Restorative justice restores, it gives back the money that the bully stole. It's going to make the thing right. Restorative justice removes fear that bullying causes. That's what restorative justice would do. And then there's a goal even beyond that. In some ways, I think Danny was hitting on this today, at least where I was connecting. But there's something even beyond that, which is, I'm going to say, redeeming love, which transforms the bully. That's what God came to do. It's more than just making things fair. It's actually changing the heart of those who do unfair things. The next thing is this idea of stewarding our privilege. 9 years ago, I watched a video that Sarah Fraser Miller made. It was her first video for House on Beekman. And in that video, at 3 minutes and 10 seconds, she gets to this one sentence that just even 9 years ago kind of hit me and continues to do so. And we'll talk about House on Beekman today as an idea of what it is to do justice. But her quote was this. It was about stewarding privilege. And here's what she said. As the people of God, we're called to steward our privilege on behalf of the poor. What an honor that God uses our small acts of obedience to bring about His kingdom in our neighborhood. And for the first time, I ever thought about the idea of me being a privileged person. And yet, as I got to thinking about it, born into the family I was born into, born in the country that I was born into, the education I have, so many other things, I'm definitely a person of privilege and, I want to say, power. Justice is using our power for God's restorative purposes. Justice hinges on how the powerful treat the vulnerable. How the powerful treat the vulnerable. That's why Jesus washed feet. He was most powerful, but He came and washed feet. Most folks, like me, will discount our power. I don't have any power. And just look around the room, and we think like we don't have some power, but maybe there's only one of us in here who doesn't have some power, and she's right over there with a white bow in her head, but maybe she does too. But power, for me, I want to think of it, and privilege, include these things for myself. It's a certain amount of strength I have, or wealth I have, or position, or status, or education, or experience, or other relationships, and more. These are the things I want you to watch for in the video. We're going to watch the video on justice now by Bible Project. Here we go. Ready, Mike? I think we go.
If you were a praying mantis, it would be socially acceptable to devour your mate.
And if you're a honey badger, you have no regard for other animals. You don't care.
If you're a panda with twins, it's normal to abandon one to take care of the other.
But if humans do any of these things, we would call it wrong, unfair, or unjust.
Yeah, why is that? Why do humans care so much about justice?
Well, the Bible has a fascinating response to that question. On page one, humans are set apart from all other creatures as the image of God.
Yeah, God's representatives who rule the world by His definition of good and evil.
And this identity, it's the bedrock of the Bible's view of justice. All humans are equal before God and have the right to be treated with dignity and fairness no matter who you are.
And that would be nice if we all did that. But we know how the world really works.
And the Bible addresses that too. It shows how we are constantly redefining good and evil to our own advantage at the expense of others.
Yeah, self-preservation. And the weaker someone is, the easier it is to take advantage of them.
And so in the biblical story, we see this happening on a personal level, but also in families, and then in communities, and in whole civilizations that create injustice, especially towards the vulnerable. But the story doesn't end there. out of this whole mess, God chose a man named Abraham to start a new kind of family. Specifically, Abraham was to teach his family to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice.
Yeah, doing righteousness, that's a Bible word I don't really use. But what comes to mind is being a good person.
But what does that even mean, being good? The biblical Hebrew word for righteousness is tzedakah, and it's more specific. It's an ethical standard that refers to right relationships between people. It's about treating others as the image of God.
With the God-given dignity they deserve.
And this word justice, it's the Hebrew word mishpat. It can refer to retributive justice.
Like if I steal something, I pay the consequences.
Exactly. Yet most often in the Bible, mishpat refers to restorative justice. It means going a step further, actually seeking out vulnerable people who are being taken advantage of and helping them.
Yeah, some people call this charity.
But mishpat involves way more. It means taking steps to advocate for the vulnerable and changing social structures to prevent injustice.
So justice and righteousness are about a radical, selfless way of life.
Yeah, and you find this idea all over the Bible. Like, here, in the book of Proverbs, what does it mean to bring about just righteousness?
Open your mouth for those who can't speak for themselves.
And what do these words mean for the prophets, like Jeremiah?
Rescue the disadvantaged, and don't tolerate oppression or violence against the immigrant, the orphan, and the widow.
And like here, look in the book of Psalms.
The Lord God upholds justice for the oppressed, gives food to the hungry, and sets the prisoner free. But he thwarts the way of the wicked. Whoa, he thwarts the wicked?
Yeah, in Hebrew, the word wicked is rasha. It means guilty or in the wrong. It refers to someone who mistreats another human, ignoring their dignity as an image of God.
So justice and righteousness is a big deal to God.
Yes, it's what Abraham's family, the Israelites, were to be all about. They ended up as immigrant slaves, being oppressed unjustly in Egypt. And so God confronted Egypt's evil, declaring them to be rasha, guilty of injustice. And so he rescued Israel. But the tragic irony of the Old Testament story is that these redeemed people went on to commit the same acts of injustice against the vulnerable. And so God sent prophets who declared Israel guilty.
But they weren't the only ones. There's injustice everywhere.
Yeah, some people actively perpetrate injustice. Others receive benefits or privileges from unjust social structures they take for granted. And sadly, history has shown that when the oppressed gain power, they often become oppressors themselves.
So we all participate in injustice, actively or passively, even unintentionally. We're all the guilty ones.
And so this is the surprising message of the biblical story. God's response to humanity's legacy of injustice is to give us a gift, the life of Jesus. He did righteousness and justice, and yet he died on behalf of the guilty. But then God declared Jesus to be the righteous one when he rose from the dead. And so now Jesus offers his life to the guilty so that they too can be declared righteous before God, not because of anything they've done, but because of what Jesus did for them.
The earliest followers of Jesus experienced this righteousness from God, not just as a new status, but as a power that changed their lives and compelled them to act in surprising new ways.
Yeah, if God declared someone righteous when they didn't deserve it, the only reasonable response is to go and seek righteousness and justice for others.
This is a radical way of life, and it's not always convenient or easy. It's courageously making other people's problems my problems.
This is what Jesus meant by loving your neighbor as yourself. It's about a lifetime commitment fueled by the words of the ancient prophet Micah. God has told you, humans, what is good and what the Lord requires of you is to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.
Highly recommend the Bible Project material. Just a moment, I want to review a few of the quotes, a few quotes from the video, and then we're going to watch another video. What do you know? But one, the root of injustice is humans constantly redefining good and evil to their own advantage at the expense of others. Another quote. And there were several Bible quotes, and I'm not going to go into all of them, but they're good. And there are many, many, many others about justice and righteousness and the two, how they mix. But this one is bring about just righteousness. Open your mouths for those who can't speak for themselves. Then he said, Jeremiah, rescue the disadvantaged and don't tolerate oppression or violence against the immigrant, the orphan, and the widow. And then, he didn't quote this one, but I'm going to. Pure religion, James chapter 1. In the sight of God is to look after the orphans and the widows in their distress. Again, all these ideas, many from James and also then from Matthew and ultimately from Jesus too, are preceded the arrival of Jesus in the Old Testament, the prophets speaking about it all the time. And so some of the things that were happening are, as the video said, some of them happen on a one-to-one relationship. I can be unjust to you. But sometimes the breakdown happens in the family. And the broken families create injustice among people, among individuals, sons and fathers, mothers and daughters, mothers and their grandchildren, even from generation to generation, how sometimes oppression or unjust behavior builds up. And so sometimes people actively perpetrate, this is one of the quotes, actively perpetrate injustice, and some people receive benefits or privilege from unjust social structures that they take for granted. This happens. And then he says, we're all guilty, actively, passively, or even unintentionally. And so what happened? Jesus, he comes for us. I don't know how you felt the first time. I've watched the video so many times, I anticipate it coming. But that first time you saw it, the words on the screen were saying that God's response to humanity's legacy of injustice is to give us a gift. And the image on the screen was, do you know what was happening right then? Is when the picture of the washing of the feet. Jesus, he sent Jesus, who had all the power, who was just, but died in an unjust death for the unjust. Are you hearing me? And this, he died on behalf, as they say, on behalf of the guilty. And this is what Paul said in Philippians, that Jesus, my paraphrase, Jesus was God, but he did not use his power or position for his own advantage. Instead, he emptied himself, he humbled himself, and he gave up his power and died on the cross for us. Sometimes doing justice requires personal sacrifice. And that's important. It requires a person to step maybe out of their position of privilege and power to help someone who's vulnerable. This is what summer camp at a house on Beekman was about. You know, summer camp, it was a hybrid. I called it a hybrid. It was partly camp and partly summer school. I would never call summer school camp. But that's what Sarah did. She thought, let's have camp, but really it's summer school. And the reason they're doing it is because the people in the South Bronx, relatively speaking, poor education system. The schools in the South Bronx are not the best. They're not the best in New York. They don't compare to the ones that we teach in, our teachers here, who go to this church. Sometimes the best teachers the kids in New York City, in the South Bronx had, and where a house on Beekman was the teachers they got in summer school. I mean, summer camp. But secret summer school is really summer camp. And so they did this. Sarah's idea was that because kids are going to fall behind somewhat in the summer anyway when they're not going to school. And so they're going to forget what they learned. So what do we do? What do we do? How do we do justice? Well, we go and we teach. And many of the people in our congregation here, even some of you are sitting here today. How many of you sitting here today, raise your hand for the others who weren't, have gone to the Bronx and taught? Yeah, what'd you teach, Danny? What have you taught? Who knew? A science, math, Bible expert. Cindy. Same as Danny, I guess. What'd you teach?
Bible.
What else did you say?
Social study.
Yeah, we went to teach. And in doing so, what do we call it? We're doing justice. Well, I messaged Sarah and asked her to make a video for us, because I wanted her to talk about what's going on in the South Bronx now, how's it going at House and Beekman. And she's had a lot of things going on, so she's just moved to Austin, and she has a new baby, and I don't know what's the big deal about that, but she said she couldn't do the video, but she suggested Dylan Hanley. And so Dylan is a guy who I met 4 years ago at spring break in New York, and he came for the last 3 years as an intern for summer camp, but then now he's full-time at a house on Beekman, and Sarah's suggestion, and I think a great suggestion, he's going to give a little update about what's going on in a house on Beekman in the South Bronx. So here's Dylan.
Hey, I'm Dylan. I'm the new primary education director at a house on Beekman. And Bob wanted me to talk about today just a small way that we can do justice, that we are doing justice in the South Bronx. And that way is through summer camp. And this year, summer camp looks really different. But just like every other year, summer camp is fighting injustice. It's doing justice. It's making wrong things right. It's joining God and being His hands and feet on the earth, of recognizing something's wrong and making it right. Except this year is just in the weirdest year that we possibly could have imagined. And so doing justice looks really different than a normal year of how we do justice at summer camp. But we still do it, even if it's small, even if it meets so many less kids, because those 10 we meet are just as deserving of our full energy and love. And so, if you know any, we'll start talking about the education system and show that how camp fights an unjust education system and does justice. So if you know anything about the South Bronx and Mott Haven, you know that the education system is one of the worst in the country, and it's definitely one of the worst in New York City. Only 10% of elementary and middle schoolers are proficient in reading. Only 13% are proficient in math. That's right, 1 in 10 students are on grade level. Some of your schools around you at home probably are around 70, 80, or 90%. Just think about the difference there. 70, 80, 90, 10. 40% of adults in Mott Haven have not graduated high school. And so when we hear stuff like this, we clearly see that there's an injustice. That some people, probably us, from where we're from, are up here because of our education and the resources we were given. Others were up here at one point sometime decades ago, centuries ago, millennia ago, but they've been pushed down. And so we recognize that as Christians, just like the Bible Project video talks about, being we have been given the salvation, the grace of God, His power through the Holy Spirit, it's our job to level the playing field, because He didn't make the earth like this. He didn't make us to be on a platform above other people. He made us to be side by side, equitable. And so when we see injustice like this, we start asking questions of like, how is this happening? Why is it like this? What systems have been put in place over and over, decades and decades ago, that keep happening today to make 10% of our students in this neighborhood, in my community, be on grade level, when in other places it's 80, 90, just a mile or two away in Manhattan, it might be 80 or 90% are on grade level. What makes that happen? And so I just have a few examples of what can play into that, because there's tons, there's hundreds probably that we could go through. But one is that high quality educators in our district are rare. There's a 20% teacher turnover rate in 2015 for our district. That's 1 in 5 teachers left that year. This prevents connections. They don't get to know the families. They don't get to know the community. They don't get to know the culture so they can meet students exactly where they are. They're an outsider coming in with no knowledge of who these kids are and how they can best support and meet them. No wonder they're not making a difference. But another part that goes into that is the fact that our families and schools are segregated financially. And what I mean by this is that schools in Manhattan might have a PTA budget, meaning their parents pour in money of up to $1 million, while some of the schools here might have one of $100. And PTA budgets have a big pull on what teachers come to your school, because it determines what resources you have, what activities you can do, and what support you're going to be provided by the parents. And so when we segregate them financially, we put the people that make less money here in the South Bronx at a much lower playing field for high-quality education, meaning they're never going to get high-quality educators because these people are never going to be fully educated. And so why do I tell you all these statistics? It's not so that it pulls in your heartstrings and makes you want to donate. No, that's just sensationalism. That's only going to prod you towards joining God until you find something else that's shiny and meets your eye. It's so that we're convicted that something about this world isn't right. And so that's what summer camp does. It recognizes something about this education isn't right, and we're going to come in and meet it and try to do our small part in making it right. Because we can't change the whole education system right now. We're working to. But right now, what we can do is we can meet a student 5 days a week during the summer and teach them math, teach them reading, and teach them Bible. Specifically with math and reading, we're going to teach them their standard, their education that they're supposed to be at, but we might catch them up. If this is a fifth grader that doesn't know how to add 5 plus 5, we're going to sit with him and we're going to teach him how to add 5 plus 5 until he can do it. Because no one else in the past has been patient enough, has seen this child as God's image enough to know that he deserves me, the energy and effort of my time, to sit here and teach him 5 plus 5 no matter how old he is. He's not just to give up on. And so in summer camp, we usually meet with students 5 days a week, have all these classes, passion projects to expose them. We go to field trips to different places. But this year we're meeting them in their homes because we've got mission teams to send supplies. They've prepackaged boxes for them to give them all the supplies they need. And then they make videos that are math, reading, Bible, astronauts, space, architecture, sports, basketball, all kinds of stuff, drama, sing-along videos, read-alouds. And then we do Zoom calls with them that it might only reach 10 students a day. But those 10 students will know that they are loved and that we're not giving up on them. They know they have someone that cares about their education, because normally all they hear is that their education isn't good and that their money's being taken away from them and their teachers don't really care about who they are. They're just doing it for a paycheck. And so this year, as we meet our students by doing math, reading, and Bible, we're doing justice. Because we're seeing that something's wrong, the education system, the fact that some students get high-quality education and some students don't, that's what's wrong. And so we're going to do justice and try to make that right. We're going to come alongside the education, and we're going to partner with our students to tell them, we're going to hold your hand and walk with you until you're where you need to be, until you go from being down here to you go from being here. Because it's my job as someone who was raised up here to lower myself, to lower my privilege, so that I can partner with someone and bring them to the same level as me. That means I have to give up part of myself. That doesn't mean I just pull them up and stay up top myself. You hear what I'm saying? This is what Beekman is trying to do through summer camp. Is that we're trying to pour out ourselves for these kids. Pour out ourselves so that they know they are made in the image of God. And pour out ourselves so that we can do justice through teaching a kid how to read, how to say the alphabet. Because these kids are made in the image of God.
Dylan Hanley spoke last year to his graduating. He was the speaker at commencement at the University of Georgia. He spoke for the student body in a speech not that different not much different than that one, telling all his University of Georgia graduating class how they ought to go spend their lives and their education helping people who are in need. I want to turn the page, though, in a quite different kind of way about the idea of doing justice. And I want you to think with me about a familiar story and yet maybe a different kind of way of seeing this story. Through the lens of Micah 6, I want us to think about Luke chapter 10. And in Luke chapter 10, it's the story, familiar story of the Good Samaritan. And the story is about a beating and a robbery. You remember? Okay. There's a beating and a robbery. And so, what is unjust about this? Well, obviously, robbery is not just. Neither is beating someone else. And so, a person who's trying to do justice has several kind of thoughts in their mind that they might have. One would be that somehow we need to stop this robbery and beating of people. And so what we need to do is come and we need to gather a group together and we're going to figure out how to persuade the government to have better lighting on the road to Jericho. And maybe they also need to have more cops along the road to Jericho because there's a lot of beatings and robberies that go on. And not only that, if we had more jobs for the robbers, they wouldn't have to rob. So we should do something about that. But that's not how the Samaritan did justice. He came, he saw the problem. And he used his resource. Now the thing is, it would be cool if he could have healed the guy, just like Jesus. Put his hand on him, boom. But he didn't. I can't do that either. But what he did, we can do. We notice there's some injustice done. And then we use our resources to make justice, make the wrong right. Now, here's what also the Good Samaritan didn't do. He didn't gather up a posse to go after and chase down the robbers and throw them in jail. He instead helped the person right in front of him who needed help. He used his power and privilege, what he had, time and money. That's what he had, time and money to use to restore the victim. I want you to think about that. One of the local heroes. I'm going to talk about a couple of local heroes, and then we're going to sing. But in all of the scriptures, and the more I've read, you know, and you begin to, and they kind of lump into this bag of scriptures of instructions from God about taking care of, like James, the widow and the orphan. I remember the first time I went into Betty and Art's house. You know, Betty and Art kind of adopted me after, I moved from Sally's house because I'd already drained her as much as I could. And so I went to Art and Betty's house probably around 2018. And I'd come over on the weekends and I'd stay at their house and Betty would feed me. But there was much more going on than that. And I noticed this on their wall, there was these pictures of people that I was wondering, who is this and who is this? Because they didn't really look like family. But then I found out that they were family. And I learned all their story of Rob and of Sarah and of Tracy and of Derek and of Chris and of Anita. And then I learned the story of Bradley by just living with Bradley, right? Like we do. What is to do justice but to open your home, open your life to people who are orphans, who need a family? Betty and Art do justice. And then, what's your definition of a great grandmother? Well, Here's my definition of a great-great-grandmother. My definition of a great-great-grandmother would be Pam Wong. Yeah. And you just a grandmother, a mother, and then a grandmother, and then a great-grandmother. Holy cow. Pam Wong does justice. And in this way, like Dylan was doing, he was trying to imitate the video with his hands, you know. Shouldn't have shown him that video. But he's like, she stepped into a life that, man, I'm 67 years old and I'm not ready to take care of a child. Colby Corbett is maybe one of the most loved kids I know. And there's this team of, it's like the Justice League, you know, the Justice League. And that'd be Danny and Cindy and Vicky and Steve, and they send Pam. Doing justice. That's what it is to do justice. And in all of our own way, God has given us opportunities all over the place if we open our eyes. You know, there were some guys who passed by that beaten and robbed man. They saw him and did nothing. Part of it is open our eyes and say, what can I do? What resources has God given me? What power and privilege has God given me that I can use when I have the opportunity, as I see injustice? How can I help? This is it, to do justice, is to use what God has given us when we see wrong happening, that we could use our resources to help. Now, I'll come back in just a moment with a closing word, because Micah didn't just say do justice. The Lord didn't just require doing justice. There was more to it than that, and we'll have a word about that. But as we stand and as we sing, as we reflect on our opportunity and God's requirement, think about it. In your life, doing justice with the power and privilege that God has given you, doing justice. Let's sing.